Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBurka Butler joins us once again to bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Afternoon,
John. How are you getting on?
Right, Colombia, where we're going to go to first, where a presidential candidate has been shot.
Yeah, this is a man by the name of Miguel Uribe Turbe, and he's actually from a kind of a political dynasty. So his grandfather was the president from 1978 to 1982. And then his mother was involved in politics as well. But she was a journalist, and she was actually kidnapped, would you believe, in 1991 when this guy, Miguel Turbe, was only four. And there was a botched kind of a raid to retrieve her, and she died in that. So he's had a bit of a sort of a tragic back history, and he's been sort of had violence in the background, the violence of Colombia in the background throughout his life, and now he's been directly affected by it. So he was at a rally. He's only 39 years of age. He was at a rally. He's trying to become presidential candidate for next year's election for his Centro Democratico party, right, Centre Democrats. They're kind of a right-wing party, and somebody took out a gun and shot him. Okay, he was shot three times, twice in the head, once in the leg. And he somehow has managed to survive. Now, this happened about 6 days ago, and I believe he's actually doing okay in hospital. It turns out that the person who shot him was 15 years of age, right? And that particular person has been charged with attempted murder, which they denied. They say that they were paid to do this. And that they, you know, that was the initial statement. And so it appears that somebody obviously other than this 15-year-old is out to get this individual. But we don't know who. And that's part of the problem, because what's happening in Colombia at the moment is, and there's an awful lot of violence, right? So there's an uptick in violence again. Okay, we reported earlier in the year about a dissident group that were attached to FARC had taken over border areas in Venezuela, and 50,000 people were displaced and the army had to move in. There's been violence down on the other side of the country as well. And some people are saying that it's drug cartels. Some people are saying that it's these dissident groups who aren't happy with the peace deal that was brought in 2016. But either way, we're back to quite a significant amount of chaos. And this is seen as very emblematic of that, okay, because there has been, you know, opposition or presidential candidates who were shot in the past during the worst days of the violence in Colombia. So this is quite a moment, shall we say, in the story of Colombia.
Where was he shot, in the sense of what part of Colombia? Was it like, was it in Bogota?
I don't know if it was in Bogota, but it was at a fairly, it was at a rally, so it was in a very public place, and it was during the day. Okay. I saw the pictures, all right. But I can't say for sure if it was.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the only reason I ask is it one of those areas? Is it in one of those areas where the violence has erupted? Nonetheless, no matter where it was, it's
indeed
a bit of a disturbing trend, especially that they don't really know what the motive behind it is. Yeah, threat did he pose?
Yeah, this is the problem, because Gustavo Petro, who's the president, who would not be on the same political side of the equation as this guy, he came out and he said, okay, this is an international narcotics organization that's trying to upend democracy in Colombia. So that's what he's no evidence for it necessarily, but he tends to come out with these statements every now and again. But then there's others who are saying, no, it's your former friends, you know, in FARC, although he wasn't in FARC, he was in M16, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
your former friends on the left who are behind this. But nobody knows at this stage who's behind it.
Right, China we're going to go to next, where civil servants have been banned from dining out in groups. Why?
Yes, so this is a strict new move that the Chinese government have issued, and they're attaching it to support these original 8-point regulations that Xi Jinping introduced all the way back in 2012. So these were anti-corruption and kind of trying to trim costs in the civil servants and also, you know, tackle corruption within the civil service. So these are being added to these 8-point regulations. And the reason for it is it's been seen that there's been a bit of extravagance lately among civil servants as they go out and go for lunches and things like that. And evidence of that has allegedly come about because three officials have died since April due to excessive drinking at official banquets.
Oh, dear.
Xi Jinping is taking the opportunity to say, OK, civil servants, if you're going out, you can't go out in groups larger than three.
And, okay, so it's very specific.
Yeah, very specific. So, you know, they're saying, you know, no more extravagant meals, no more luxury vehicles, and even decorative plants in the middle of meetings or in the middle of tables at lunches or whatever it might be aren't allowed anymore. This is what they put into the rules, apparently.
No, but does that mean like if four people go to McDonald's for lunch, that's for voting as well?
You see, this is what people are saying, right? So there have been a few complaints online, which is quite a rare thing apparently in China, as you can imagine, right? But people are saying, look, am I not allowed to go, exactly as you say, to McDonald's with a group of my friends, even if I'm paying for the thing myself? Like, I mean, what's to stop me from doing that? And I suppose it's one of these things, it depends on how it's policed. I mean, there's some places in the Chinese civil service, and it's a huge country, obviously, so it's in different divisions or in different parts of China. You know, you get breathalyzed when you come into work, or you're told to go straight home and not out, after work to socialize at all. So you can imagine it's a different world altogether that we're dealing with.
So are people actually being sanctioned for doing this already? Are they getting punished already?
Well, going back to these eight point regulations, these are lists of various rules that you're not allowed to break. And according to official figures, there was over 16,500 officials punished in April alone for breaking those rules. Now, I think this is pre these sanctions coming in, because these were only brought in last month. But still, it's a good indicator of how heavy they're going to come down on you if you step out of line.
Yeah, and I assume the sanctions vary depending on the severity of
I would imagine so.
Whether it was eight people having Big Macs, how severe that was. Right, Kenya we're going to go to next, where a senior policeman has been arrested.
Yeah, so this is a story that kind of continues on from lots of stories that we hear from Kenya around police brutality. They have a real problem around this. It's a very corrupt organisation right throughout the country. But this particular story focuses on Nairobi, where the head of the main police station in that city, a man by the name of Samson Talam, has been arrested along with two others, right? Police Constable James Mukwana and a technician who has been accused of disabling the station's CCTV footage. So the reason I'm including so much detail there is because you're probably getting a picture of what these guys have possibly done already. So a man has died, okay, and this man was called Albert Owang. He's a blogger and a teacher, 31 years of age. He had posted some criticism of the Deputy Inspector General of the police force on X. Yeah. And obviously someone within that station wasn't happy about it. They arrested this individual, they brought him in, and effectively he died in custody, okay? Initially, the police issued a statement saying that they found him in his cell unconscious with severe head injuries, and they brought him to hospital where he died. And they concluded that he had done this to himself. So they actually, and given their history, which I'll go into in a minute, they actually came up with this statement basically saying that he had banged his own head against a wall because he was so upset about what he had done. Now, doctors straight away disagreed with them. They refuted what the police had said, and they said that he died from self-inflicted injuries. Straight away, it went into internal affairs. They call it the Independent Policing Oversight Authority there. And they, thankfully, I have to say, agreed with the doctors, okay? Launched an investigation, and these guys have been arrested. They haven't been charged, okay? One of them has gone up for a hearing, but hasn't been charged yet. So further investigations will come about. But as I said, it's a very corrupt organisation, and there's a lot of violence, right? So there was nearly 160 cases of extrajudicial killings and enforced disappearances reported across Kenya last year. And so far this year, 20 people have died in police custody in Kenya. It's a shocking amount.
It's also interesting that how few people they've charged about this, because it's not just the person who committed the original offence people who committed the original offence. It's the other officers who said, oh, no, nothing to see here.
Exactly.
That people would buy it.
So this is why the fellow who looks after the CCTV has been arrested. He's been pulled in. The head of the station has been pulled in. But I should say that 23 other people have been questioned.
Okay.
And there are some people who have actively gone on the run as well. So they are being looked for. So there are more people involved. Just these are the three that have been caught so far.
What's the story between Ghana and the UK? It's a really odd one about this young fella, 14, a British but Santillana, and then was stuck there.
Yeah, he's 14 now, and he was 13 at the time that his parents told him that he was going to visit his sick grandmother in Ghana because she wasn't particularly well and was probably about to die or something like that. This was the story that they spun. Now, it should be said that the parents are from Ghana, but this boy is a Londoner.
Okay? Yeah, okay.
When he got there, he discovered that he had been enrolled into a boarding school, which he wasn't particularly happy about, and the parents left him there. So somehow, and this is the bit that I'm not 100% sure about, but somehow he managed to get in touch with lawyers. Now, I imagine perhaps this kid is well-to-do. He's certainly well-informed, okay,
yeah,
as to how to look after himself. But they managed to bring a case, I think it was an NGO, managed to bring a case on his behalf last year to the High Court, and this is in the UK. And the High Court in February of last year ruled that while the boy had been misled by his parents, the actions of his parents were lawful under their parental rights. Okay, so the judge at that time felt that it fell within their remit of
yes,
being parents. Now, he appealed that, and it looks like he's won his appeal, or at least he's won the right to appeal. Okay, so last week, the UK Court of Appeal overturned the decision that came in February of last year and said that, you know, the initial ruling didn't bring into consideration the thoughts or the emotions of the boy or the psychological effects that it was going to have on the boy.
Mm.
So it's going to have to be heard again. And pointedly, the Court of Appeal said under a different judge. So back to the High Court, but we want a different judge to look at this, which I thought was a bit of a slap in the face to the previous judge. But that's maybe how these things work.
Okay. So it means that theoretically it's going to be made illegal to lie to your children. I think that would be bad news for parents all over the world.
Yes, yeah, I think it would be.
Were the parents heard for? Was there something they were trying to get this young fella away
yeah,
from? Was he getting in trouble? Was it, you know, that kind of stuff?
So that's a good question. And this is the reason the initial ruling was given in their favour, right? So they had found pictures of knives on his phone. He was coming back with fancy clothes and unexplained cash in his pockets.
Mm-hmm.
So they said
right,
to themselves, okay, gang violence, he's getting involved in something he shouldn't be involved in. Let's get him out of here, off to Ghana, and he can see out his education in Ghana, and then maybe he'll come back. But interestingly, this young fella, this 14-year-old, has testified saying that he's living in hell in Ghana. He can't understand a word that people are saying to him, can't understand what's going on, has no friends, people are slagging him the whole time, and he just doesn't want to be there. And he says he wants to come back to the UK to complete his GCSEs, even if that meant entering foster care, he said. And the Court of Appeal has taken that into consideration, and they said in their ruling, they said that showed a kind of a level of maturity that indicates
yeah,
that he might come back and, you know, take things seriously.
Yeah.
Not that he was necessarily not taking them seriously in the first place. We don't know.
Yeah, okie dokie. Right, North Korea, we're going to go to finally. And they've stopped broadcasting into South Korea.
They have. Not that they were broadcasting beautiful radio shows like this, Sean. These were broadcasts that were coming from loudspeakers and they were very noisy. So look, this started happening. So there's the demilitarized zone between North Korea and South Korea. As you know, it's been there since whenever, the late 1950s, early 1960s. And in 1963, South Korea set up these loudspeakers and they started firing loads of propaganda into the
yeah,
North. So the North followed suit and they
yeah,
did the same back. And this was going on for years until 2004 when they reached an agreement to stop. Then it started again in 2015 and then it stopped again for a few years until last year, right? So last June, the South Koreans said, okay, you North Koreans, stop sending your balloons with rubbish and human feces into our country, if you
yeah,
remember that story.
Yeah.
Or we're going to keep these loudspeakers going. And so they started up the loudspeakers again and it all started. Now, there's an important and serious element to this, and that is that you remember that the end of last month, or was it earlier this month, South Korea got a new president.
Yes.
Okay. And so this guy has decided, this is Lee Jae-myung, who's the new president, has decided, look, I want to take a more conciliatory tone with the North. We need to talk to them rather than be their enemy and be antagonistic towards them. So this is something that he's done. It's come from him. He said, we're going to shut off our loudspeakers. He did it on Wednesday.
Okay, and they haven't asked for anything back from the North.
Didn't ask for anything
yeah,
back from the North,
okay,
but the North turned off their loudspeakers on the Thursday.
Right.
And nothing's been heard since.
Okay.
On either side.
Okay, so if you like, that's a small sign.
A little bit of hope, Sean.
Between the two sides. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah, a few things coming up on Wednesday, which is tomorrow. Obviously, Premier League fixtures, which I know you'll be glued to for next season, will be announced. And then Thursday, perhaps more interestingly, the deadline for ByteDance to divest TikTok in the United States will come about. It'll probably be extended.
Yeah.
He loves extending these deadlines. And then Saturday is the summer solstice. And also Prince William turns 43 on the same day.
Right. Okay. So we'll be out raving that night. Good Jonathan, thanks a million. As ever, Jonathan DeVerka Butler there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.